going up?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning. Happy Friday from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. A funding bill heads to the White House. Another accused Ponzi schemer is brought up on charges. Plus, attendance is up at museums. And where, might I add, is Wall Street? You guessed it. Up. Right now, the S&P up about 1%, NASDAQ 1.5%, and the Dow 0.6% at 86.08. European shares right now up as well, London nearly 2%, and Asia stocks closed higher as well. Julie Nieman is an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She joins us live from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So Wall Street and overseas markets upbeat today, but I've got a headache from the ups and mainly downs of the week. What gives?
Oh, we're just adjusting our rose-colored glasses this morning. Bottom line is the rate of economic plunge is slowing. Now, it hasn't bottomed out yet, but that doesn't bother the street. Economic information still isn't encouraging. You've got jobs still going lower, incomes lower, and debt going up. But the policymakers really have gotten religion here, and we have averted a depression. So now you've got all this money sitting in money market funds, only earning 0.8%, and this fear is being replaced with not so much let's leave it there where we are totally safe, but go with a little caution here. They're not running back into treasuries. They're moving into defensive stocks like healthcare, utilities, telecom, food. These kinds of stocks typically protect you a little bit when the economy is still in a slump, but you're still in the market.
I want to talk about this Wall Street Journal report this morning, Julie. Bank CEOs at places such as Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, Regions, using personal jets for, I should say company jets for personal use. Mexico, the Caribbean. I mean, a couple of the banks say it's within their policies. Bank of America says it's going to forbid it in the future. I mean, how much change has really come to these financials?
Well, change only comes when they're forced to, and they're not really being forced to here. Those 14 bailed out banks, the executives are still carrying on as they have in the past. And the only thing that makes them change is huge scrutiny at this point in time. You know, so until there's, they're shamed into it, they're going to continue to take all the perks they feel entitled to it. So the same people who brought us into this mess are still enjoying the ill-gotten goods.
All right. Julie Nieman joining us from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
Have a good weekend. $106 billion appropriation funding operations in Iraq and Afghanistan is headed to President Barack Obama for his signature today. The package overwhelmingly passed the Senate yesterday and includes money for foreign aid, the flu, and the Cash for Clunkers program. That's Uncle Sam's way to get people into more fuel-efficient cars. The debate, however, has been anything but a smooth ride. Here's Marketplace's Steve Henn.
The bill will offer new car buyers up to $4,500 cash back from the federal government if they trade in an old car or truck that gets lousy mileage. The bigger the difference in fuel economy between the new car and the trade-in, the bigger the federal subsidy. But what's the bill for this bill?
$1 billion!
That caused Republican Senator Judd Gregg to sputter.
By the way, in New Hampshire, $1 billion will pretty much run our state government for a considerable period of time. $1 billion is a lot of money!
But Michigan Senator Democrat Debbie Stabenow argued cash for clunkers is key to getting Detroit's motor running again.
This is an emergency for families and small businesses, for an industry that has been the backbone of our economy for a generation.
Car dealers are excited too, but the bill doesn't just allow anyone to tow in a junker that's been up on blocks to collect a check. To qualify for the federal rebate, your trade-in has to have been on the road and insured for the past year. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Texas billionaire Alan Stanford is expected in a Virginia courtroom this afternoon. He's expected to face charges in an $8 billion Ponzi scheme he surrendered to authorities in Virginia yesterday. You're listening to The Morning Report for Friday, June 19th, 2009 at marketplace.org. It's iPhone Day again. Starting this morning, you can pick up the latest smartphone from Apple, the iPhone 3GS, in stores. But the economic climate is quite a bit different from the last iPhone release, which was before the financial crisis. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
With consumers cutting back, Apple hopes to break into the business world, a world dominated by BlackBerries. Here's Apple's Greg Joswick.
iPhone 3GS now has hardware encryption, which was a big request for businesses.
And to keep consumers lining up at Apple stores, the phone's price will stay at $199 if you're willing to sign a 2-year contract with AT&T. The new phone can shoot video, and Joswick says its speed will be noticeable.
What people you'll be amazed about is even browsing the web is faster on the same exact network.
That network, AT&T, has drawn complaints for its spotty service. But Roger Kay at Endpoint Technology says that doesn't appear to be taking a bite out of Apple's sales.
It's the value of the available services. In this particular case, the services are all of these applications that you can get either for free or for very cheap.
And in case you're wondering, 1 billion of those applications have been downloaded since the App Store's launch just a year ago. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
European Union leaders are backing a new system of financial regulation today. The idea is to help prevent the next financial crisis. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
A draft communique from an EU summit in Brussels spells out some sweeping changes. There are going to be new EU-wide bodies policing the regulation of banking, securities and insurance. A systemic risk board will be set up to spot credit problems before they explode. These bodies will have the power to guide national regulators across Europe. Graham Mather is director of the European Policy Forum in London.
There is going to be, therefore, a significant shift in power. No longer will matters be outside European supervision. The EU as a whole will have a grip.
He says Britain fought to retain total control over its own financial centre in London, but it looks as if that control has been diluted. The draft also contains an upbeat message on the EU economy. It says there are signs of sustainable recovery and that no further fiscal stimulus is required. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Has the government got a deal for you? As you may have heard, it's got a surplus of red ink. So it's selling, about $104 billion worth next week. Government's madly selling treasuries to bring in much-needed cash for its increasingly expensive rescue programs. But as Marketplace's Bob Moon reports, raising so much cash isn't without its consequences.
All those IOUs are stacking up sky high, as investment manager Axel Merck sees it.
According to our calculations, Treasury has to issue about $15 billion every single business day until the end of the year.
Now imagine Uncle Sam rushing over to another window to buy those bonds back. Why? Because all that government borrowing is pushing interest rates higher.
The government wants to issue a lot of debt. On the other hand, the Federal Reserve wants to have low interest rates so the economy gets moving. Now, in our view, just mathematically, it is extremely difficult to work, and the Federal Reserve should allow interest rates to go higher. Having said that, that may throw the economy into a tailspin.
Especially if mortgage rates creep higher, but Merck says there aren't many options left for controlling interest rates.
What they're trying to do is to keep them low mostly by talking.
He worries, though, how long this can go on before the market stops buying the reassurances. The Fed, he says, is not almighty. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
As the summer movie season continues, there's been talk that Hollywood's high hopes for the blockbuster season have yet to be realized. Early in the year, the surprise success of movies such as Paul Blart, Mall Cop, raised expectations that this summer would be a record setter. But that hasn't been the case so far, Ashley Milne-Tite reports.
Ticket sales rose 17% in the first 4 months of this year. Could that be recession-related? Jason Squire thinks so. He's a professor at the University of Southern California's School of Cinematic Arts.
My own opinion is that there was a connection between strong box office and the desire to escape.
But summer's the big season for the movie business, and sales are down compared to last year. Still, Squire says those numbers don't tell the whole story.
And should not be considered a negative until the end of the summer figures are in and the season is complete.
He says a string of potential blockbusters are opening in the next several weeks, including some much-anticipated sequels.
You have no choice.
Harry, no!
You must not fail.
Squire says the latest Harry Potter and Transformers movies could help push ticket sales back up. And even if a movie disappoints at home, overseas sales could more than make up for it. In Los Angeles, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
This week, President Obama said that thinking about the soaring deficits keeps him awake at night. Got us thinking, what should the president do to manage our debt? So we invited a couple of commentators, Will Wilkinson and Matt Iglesias, to come up with their own solutions. And yes, they don't agree. Will has the floor first.
The real danger is that our foreign lenders are going to get spooked and think that we might not be able to repay the money that they lent us. So they'll charge higher interest rates. And when they do that, we'll have to spend more money to refinance our debt. And that's how you get into a debt spiral. That's when inflation skyrockets. That's when whole economies collapse. And I think there's a kind of American exceptionalism. We think that it's not going to happen to us. But I think that's just the same kind of wishful thinking that got us into the housing crisis in the first place.
I mean, I'm glad you brought up the subject of interest rates, because I think that's actually the right index to worry about here rather than raw dollar numbers. And now it's true, what happened in the 70s and 80s was that interest rates on the debt really did get too high, and it was a problem for the economy. And that's why there were serious efforts made to curb the deficit, to bring interest rates down, and it was successful. But it's really just not the situation we're in. Interest rates 2 or 3 months ago had hit sort of historic lows, and so now they're back up to where they were maybe 18 months ago. But that's fine. And in fact, with interest rates being very low, it's sort of perverse to be worrying about taking on debt.
Well, yeah, Matt, interest rates haven't gone up yet, but they will if we don't get our fiscal house in order. Standard & Poor's more or less threatened to reduce the UK's credit rating. And the same thing could happen to us. It's real. And when that rating drops, interest rates skyrocket, and then you get on that inflationary death spiral that could wreck the economy for generations.
It's important to take problems on in order. And right now we're in a situation when the overwhelming concern needs to be helping individuals get through the recession and helping the country's economy get moving again. Worrying about possible problems with future deficits, it's a little bit like standing inside your house is on fire, and you're worrying that it might rain tomorrow.
Yeah, I understand that Democrats in the administration don't want to face up to the fact that they're incredibly constrained, partially because of the reckless spending of the prior generation. But so far, we're acting like a guy who jumps from a 10th-story window and thinks it's going fine so far right before he hits the sidewalk. If we keep going at this pace, the sidewalk is going to come up fast.
Will Wilkinson is a senior fellow with the Cato Institute. Matt Iglesias is a fellow with the Center for American Progress. Got your own opinion about the deficit? Go to marketplace.org and click on the link that says Contact Us. These days of finding things to do without breaking the bank, museums, the old standards, are making a comeback. Instead of drumming up negative connotations such as being musty and boring, people are seeing museums as an inexpensive way to learn new things, and that's boosting those numbers. From Station WBUR in Boston, Kurt Nickisch reports.
The Harvard Museum of Natural History is about as old school as they come. Brick building, tall ceilings, and lots of dead animals in glass cases.
Look at that big mouse, Mom! And look at flying squirrels.
Allison and Leanna Cameron are here with their mom, Mary. She brought them here not only for the stuffed rodents, she wanted to keep her pocketbook stuffed.
We did come on Wednesday afternoon because it's free to get in from 3 to 5. It certainly was a factor.
Cameron is part of a growing number of people searching out museums lately for their low cost, even with admission. After all, the average entry fee nationwide is $7 a head. Elizabeth Werby runs this Harvard Museum and says the number of visitors here is up 10% so far this year.
Because people recognize museums are a value in this economy. They find inspiration, education, and fun for a relatively low price, and we're happy to provide that.
And this is a trend that's happening nationally. The American Association of Museums has been happy to see a boost in attendance after years of declines, especially now when many museum endowments have plummeted. That's what happened to the Whaling Museum in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
This first one is a humpback. The next one, do you know what this one is? This is the largest.
Tours are fuller this year with 8% more visitors. The Whaling Museum is trying to ride that wave to improve its finances. Here's Vice President Kristen Sneezek.
We decided to take a risk and offer free admission not only to our students, but also to family members that live in the New Bedford area. And we were packed. It worked quite well.
Gift store sales were up $3,000 during the promotion, but Sneezek is gambling on a bigger payback. She's hoping those families will come back again soon, maybe join as members, make a donation, possibly rent the place out for a special event. She says that's where the real revenue is for museums. In Boston, I'm Kurt Nickisch for Marketplace.
Hey, we have a museum of air, at our website, marketplace.org, where you can share your thoughts with us and our online host and blogger, Scott Jagow. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.